Log Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show. Today is Saturday, July 9th, 2022, and we have a very special guest for you today, the mayor of Aliceville, Alabama, Mr. Terrence Windham is with us today. But before we get started with the show, let me just give you just a brief background about the Council of Elders concept. It's a concept where elders in the community will try to reach out and guide and help younger people navigate through life and also listen to younger people for their wisdom is great as well. And so it's a two-way street. And today we happen to have a young man, 34 years old. He is... He works at the Federal Correctional Institution in Aliceville, Alabama. He is the mayor of Aliceville, Alabama, my hometown. And he is also a minister at the Northside Missionary Baptist Church in Columbus, Mississippi. And I believe that you would believe, as I do, that he is a very impressive young man. Mayor Windham, thank you for coming on the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show today.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Right, right. And I understand that you are at a family reunion today.
Oh, yes, sir. We have a reunion going on today. So we are just celebrating, trying to beat the heat for the most part because it's about 93 degrees here in Alabama with a humidity of probably about 107.
Oh, okay, okay.
Not like
yeah,
that
I
California
was.
Weather that you guys have.
It was so hot here today, Mayor. You wouldn't believe. Yesterday it was so hot you wouldn't believe it. So.
Yes,
don't
sir,
believe
yes,
all
sir.
This. It gets hot here
I
too.
I can't believe all. I heard that. I heard that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I was in Aliceville last month, and I was impressed that, you know, some of the streets have been paved and everything, and it looks nice and fresh. And so I know that during your administration, you know, some of this stuff, that kind of got started. So I want to congratulate and thank you for that.
Yes, sir. Yes. Well, we're trying to we're just trying to do the little bit that we can do with the resources that we have available to us. We're a small town. We're population size of 2,500 less, and so we don't have some of the same resources that other larger communities with more industry and more. more population opportunities have, but we try to use what we have to make Aliceville the best place that it can be with the resources that it has. So paving our streets, we haven't paved them probably in the last maybe 20 years or so, probably about 20 years. I think I was in high school when we paved the majority of the street. And a lot of it was some of the things that were done was due to lack of maintenance and other things, but some of them just needed to be repaved. And so we were able to make that project happen. So I'm just glad that you got an opportunity to experience it on some smooth roads. And funny, because when you fix one problem, you don't necessarily create another problem, but you create another opportunity that you got to figure out what to do. And as I surveyed some other communities and asked them, hey, when you guys paved your roads, what were some of the issues that you had? And one of the primary issues that they said was that once we got the roads paved, the issue was speeding, because now everybody doesn't have to dodge the potholes that were your natural speed breakers. So it's been interesting. So it's fun.
Once you pave the road, then people go faster, so you have to be careful about that now, huh?
That's it. One thing leads to another. So I told all our students there's some roads that, you know, some speedy roads, and we're gonna put the speed breaker down. But I told them, hey, when you get that ticket, please do not come to my office to ask for a reprieve. I'm gonna just suggest to you that you pay your money and slow down. Yes, sir.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, Mayor. Once you got
yes,
the street paved,
yes,
you know, people can go faster. But tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. So in case that you are calling in today, we're talking to Mayor Terrence Windham, the mayor of Aliceville, Alabama. He's so gracious to be with us. He's actually at a family reunion today, and he's taking the time out to talk to our audience. But Mayor, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yes, sir. Well, my just a little bit about myself. I went to Aliceville High School by way of Russellville, Alabama. That's North Alabama, and that's about 2 hours away from Aliceville. I moved here to Aliceville when I was in the seventh grade, and went to Aliceville High School. And after high school, graduated, went to a school in Jacksonville, Alabama, which is on the east side of Alabama, close to Atlanta, Georgia. I went to a school called Jacksonville State University, and had an opportunity to get exposed to a lot of opportunities there. Majoring in biology, and got a chance to do some social leadership skills, working with the Student Government Association. I was the vice president of the SDA at Jacksonville for a year, and pledged Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. So that was a those were some positive experiences that I had there, and they kind of helped me as I moved forward to graduation. I graduated in 2010 and then moved back to Aliceville and worked in the family business, which is a funeral home. We have a funeral home that's been in our family since 1947. And I went to school for that. My granddad had gotten a little sick, and I was just trying to help the family business and help them, because he had a farm at that time and was doing some farming too. And my father hadn't retired just yet, so moved back home. Didn't really want to, but the move that I had to make at the time. And wound up going to school again and get my funeral service degree. And shortly thereafter, I started working at the federal prison. So I've been there about 10 years. So that's a little gist of who I am and kind of what I've done, I guess.
Right. Well, there's actually more to that. You're the mayor of Aliceville, and you are also a minister.
Okay.
You're a family man.
Yes, sir.
You're a family man as well.
Yes, sir. I have a married, have a wife and two kids, have a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. So they keep me pretty busy most of the time. And I enjoy spending time and being with them. It's pretty cool. And I guess on the government side of things, started out with the city going to council meetings and being involved and trying to figure out what's going on from that standpoint, because I was in the SGA at Jacksonville State, so they kind of carried over, and I did some political work with some political campaigns for the state representative body and things, so that kind of got me involved with the government and politics. And when I got here, started to come to council meetings, there was just a couple of concerns that I had. We needed a mosquito truck. There was one that ran, and it wasn't running. I asked them to consider buying that, and it took them about a year after I asked them, and they finally bought that, and just a couple of other things that I would just try to bring up just as a citizen. And so I guess I was 22, 23, and so I said, well, I'll just run for council. And so I ran against a lady who was had been an incumbent for, I think, almost 30 years, and beat her. And when I beat her, I beat her by one vote. So that's why I tell people, everybody says your vote doesn't matter and elections are rigged and people can't win. The system is already checked. I'm a living witness to let you know, hey, that is not true. If you vote, you never know what opportunity that you might get presented with, and if you don't vote, you can lose. And if I hadn't voted for myself, or if one person had chose not to support me, or two people had chose not to support me, I wouldn't have got in. So was the youngest council member in the state then, I believe. And then talking about some setbacks that I had in the political game, and that's why it's good to align yourself with some good people. I ran, and there was a campaign form that I didn't know I needed to fill out. I got the campaign packet, and it said if you had a campaign committee, then you needed to put all the people who were on your committee, and if you raised any money, then you need to make sure you put how much money you raised. I didn't have a committee. It was just a one-man team. I just went to people's house door to door, and I didn't have any funds that I raised. So I thought on my own, hey, Terrence, you don't have to turn in no campaign form. And so the other lady who I was running against, she found out after she lost that I did turn the form in, challenged the election, had to go to court, and the judge ultimately threw out the entire election. And so I asked the council members who were there currently, hey, I won the election fair and square, and I have been serving about 2 years at this point. I won the election fair and square. Is there, to me, the will of the people is that I serve, so I ask that you appoint me to this position so I can continue to serve. And, of course, they were all friends with her and didn't want to cross her, for lack of a better word, so they decided to put her back in. So that's kind of how my election got stolen away from me, so to speak, but that's a lesson that was a lesson to me to make sure that you follow the or understand what the rules are, and then make sure that you follow the rules because somebody is always watching. So that kind of taught me some good lessons. And like I said, I don't want to just paint the picture that all life has been successful because it's been some setbacks and some letdowns. But overall, as long as you learn from those lessons, that's the key. And then ran again for council, and then I got it out right that time. And then in 2020, I ran against the same person who I ran against for the council district that two elections ago. And there was another gentleman who was running, and I won without a runoff. So I think I got like 66% of the vote or something like that. So those were all those moments in the past kind of led me up to that, and it taught me to make sure you do your paperwork correctly, make sure you follow through what you got to do. And like I said, God has been able to bless me so far. So I just thankful.
Right. Well, you know, that's a great, you know, you learn from your mistake. I was listening to a gentleman the other day, and he was talking about how he had got arrested, and and he was talking about the system and how it's bad and this and that. But the reason that he had got arrested is that he hadn't paid his child support, you know.
Right.
And so
right.
Some kind of way they arrested him. And he was talking all about the system. And I was thinking to myself, man, he said he was supposed to go to court, right? But he didn't
right.
go. He didn't go to court, you know. So he didn't go to court to take care of it. And then when he got arrested, he was all been out of shape, you know. But I'm thinking, man, you should have went to court and took care of that, you know. So that's kind of in line with what you were saying, you know, the lesson that you had learned. About even though if the paperwork was supposed to have been turned in, you know, even though you didn't turn it in, thought it didn't matter.
Right.
But at hindsight, you know that it did matter. But let me ask you something.
Exactly.
In your campaign, what are some of the things, what were some of your campaign issues that you was talking about?
Well, when I was running on the mayor's side, I ran on the auspice of going forward together. That was my campaign slogan. And so that pretty much was just trying to let us know, hey, we're in a different situation right now. Some might define it as bad or, you know, whatever. But the goal for us now, doesn't matter where we are, is just to move forward. And so the idea was just to try to say, hey, we want to move forward in all aspects of our city government. And the ones that I tried to identify were forward as a community. Being in the South, you grew up in Aliceville, so you're aware of it. Two different groups of people who live here, and it's two different communities that are here. And so some of that I'm trying to do is break those barriers down, where the black people don't just go to the black people stuff and the white people don't just go to white people stuff or know about it. Because sometimes it's not that they want it to be exclusive, but it's the fact that no one knows about it because their kids don't go to school together. There's a private school that the majority of the Caucasian kids go to. At the public schools, it's the majority of where the African-American kids go to, or 99.5% of them go to. And so there's kind of a disconnect. So I want to kind of bring that together through community. So trying to have events that are outside the norm, trying to bring events bring opportunities for children to come together to kind of help break the mold and learn, excuse me, and learn their other brothers and sisters who are in the community. And so that's why I want to move forward with community in that aspect. On the second aspect is moving forward with infrastructure. Part of that was dealing with roads. We had a number of roads that had some issues. And although at the time I didn't know we were going to be able to secure some of the resources that we secured in order to pay the city, which was about, as small as Allisville is, it still was about a $3.5 million project that we're in the process of completing. But excuse me. there's a need for improved Wi-Fi broadband, not just in the city limits. The city limits has a good some good broadband opportunities. The city limits has some great broadband opportunities where I think we get up to a gig of speed, which is, I know it's slow for you guys and on part of where you are now, but for us, a gig speed is a lot years ahead. But there were some desert areas in the city that we're trying to cover, and then also trying to reach outside the city limits because a lot of our community members live outside the city limits. So trying to expand the broadband as water and sewer, trying to make sure that all our water and sewer are adequate. So just, those were the two campaigns. Well, actually, those are two of them. And then the third one was trying to improve our healthcare opportunities. Recently in the county, our only hospital closed, and it was in Carrollton. It's about 15 minutes away. And so be it that was the issue, we have only two methods that people can get to health care quickly in the event of an emergency, which is by helicopter, life flight is what it's called, and then, of course, by ambulance. So when the hospital closed, that put additional stress on our healthcare system, transportation system in particular, and that made, where the helicopters would be out of commission because now you got a whole county that has no hospital, and that makes where our ambulance services, which they only have two ambulance for the entire county. So if one of them is out on the call, or both of them are out on the call, or one of them's come back on the call, it makes it to where it's almost impossible to do it unless someone gets in their car and takes their loved one to the hospital, which is what we advise them to do if you can't get an ambulance. So one of the things, the first thing I did was try to reach out to our congresspeople the legislators on the state level, and because they were the one that really had the power to make something change on that. There was some infrastructure money that came down. The hospital closed in March of 2020. And that was when COVID first, quote, was official. And so that caused us to be in a tight in the middle of a pandemic. So we went the whole pandemic without a hospital. Even though we had a hospital that was readily available, nothing wrong with it, brand new, all good. It just we didn't have adequate staffing, and they closed the hospital. So the other side to that is the federal government did issue out money to hospitals who were open. And so who were registered as hospitals. Carrollton was one of those hospitals. They received about $5 million, but the hospital board was afraid to use the money to open the hospital because they didn't know what the stipulations were according to them. And for lack of better terms, they didn't open the hospital when they could have. And so I tried to emphasize, I went to our state legislator and tried to emphasize, this is what we got. This is what we're working with. This is the information that we need in order to try to get this moving. And it wasn't an issue of the Democrats and Republicans not getting along on the Congress level with our congresswoman and our senators, because they work together fabulously. But on our local level with our state politicians, those were the ones that gave us the issues. So long story short, hospital still closed. So the other item that I kind of did was try to reach out to some health clinics. And so I reached out to some federal health clinics who were in the area and tried to get them to bring a clinic to Aliceville, so that way we would have at least some type of medical option outside of the two doctors that we had. And so I'm glad to say that I think about 2 or 3 months ago, I got confirmation that there is a health center called Whiteley Health Center, and they're going to build a facility in Aliceville that will be a direct help to the citizens. So we tried to do it. It seemed like, you know, it's been kind of fast, but we seemed like we tried to deliver on most of those goals. We still got a lot more to go, but we want to but like I said, that's where we started, and it seems like we're going in a good direction to keep on with the progress that we had.
That's good. So you say that the health clinic is on the drawing boards in the near future?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's on the drawing board. Hopefully by September it'll be completed by September. And then we'll be able to have that on board, and people have an option to give themselves health opportunities. Even though it's not a hospital, they're not going to do emergency procedures there. But if somebody is, you know, is dire sick, they don't have to worry about trying to figure out how to get to Tuscaloosa or slide in to the doctor's office the week after next, and that clinic will be able to readily accept them a lot faster. So.
Yeah, I can see that clinic will save some lives because, you know, they can help with preventative measures, and also they can direct somebody if they are sick. They can at least keep them together until they can get them to the hospital, you know. So I want to congratulate you on that, helping facilitate and getting a clinic in Aliceville. Although it's not a complete hospital, it is a start, you know. It's better than better than nothing. So congratulations on that. Yeah, if anybody is listening right now, you have a question or comment for Mayor Windham, you can press the number 1 on your phone, and we'll let you make a ask a question or make a comment.
Yes, sir.
But your campaign moving forward together, you wanted to kind of unite the people in Aliceville, break some of the barriers down, improve the infrastructure, roads and streets, and also improve the Wi-Fi. Also, you want to improve the health care opportunities, and some or all of those things that you campaigned on are coming into fruition. So I think you're doing a good job. Congratulations.
We try. Like I said, that's the one thing I don't do when I run for office is make is try to make promises. I know we can. There are certain things that, yeah, the snap of a finger can happen, but a lot of the work is subjected to the people who you're working with, and so you have to have a good team to work with that'll follow your direction and know that, hey, you got the best interest of the city in mind whenever you're making decisions and making decisions and other type of and other type of processes. And you know, although I'm like the youngest on the council, on the mayor and council side, and also one of the three youngest mayors in the state of Alabama, all of which who are African-American men, I'm proud to say, and one of them is my frat brother. You know, for the most part, you know, the city council members have been very receptive to the ideas that I presented. They asked the tough questions and tried to make sure that we were on the path that we need to go. And I have to commend them for their work as well.
Oh, okay. If you're just tuning in, folks, we're talking with Mayor of Aliceville, Alabama today, Terrence Windham. I think he's doing a phenomenal job as the mayor of Aliceville, and we're just so very happy to have him on the show today. He's a busy man, and sometimes they say if you want anything done, talk to someone that's busy. So I want to thank you for coming in today.
I'm about to use that one. I like that. So I might have to take that on. But yeah, that's a good one.
Right. Okay. So looks like I got a caller here in the 770 area code. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from, and ask your question or comment.
My name is Malcolm Hughes, calling from outside of Atlanta, Georgia. I'm wondering, I heard you mention the healthcare challenge that you have in Aliceville. Could you talk about economic development and what, if any, plans you guys have down there in order to grow the city economically?
Okay, great question. And thank you, thank you for calling in with us today. Part of the challenge that we face economically is dealing with housing. And so one of the other priorities that that I have is trying to develop or bring in some developers to build our housing infrastructure a little bit better than what it is. Our newest apartment complex that's not income-based or income-limited was built in 1972. So, and those apartments are, older. Some of them have been upgraded, and it's limited to about maybe 10 or so units. With that being said, if people don't have a place to live in your community, then you can bring all the jobs that you want to in the community, but the people will come into your job and then they will drive out and you will get no income outside of buying a hot dog or a hamburger or a Subway sandwich or something like that, and getting the little bit of money that you'll get for fuel if they purchase fuel in your area, which for the most part, they're going to purchase it in their metro area where it's cheaper because they can afford to get it at a better rate. So one of our header goals is looking at economic opportunities for either the city or a developer to come in and provide the resources to build apartment complexes colonial style homes to the fact of so that way those people have the opportunity to live in that community. And then once people live in Aliceville, then they'll spend their money in Aliceville. So the problem that we ran into with the prison, we had a quarter of a billion-dollar prison being built, or that's built in Aliceville. It employs 300 people up to 300 or so people. Until recently, the majority of those people who live or who work there lived outside of the community. They lived in Tuscaloosa, which is about an hour away, or Columbus, which is about 30 to 45 minutes away, Columbus, Mississippi. So all of our tax dollars were going to Columbus and going to Tuscaloosa. Now that ratio is starting to kind of change to where some of those people are living in Aliceville, but there's still no homes that are being built in Aliceville. Our average home age that's in this area is probably, I think it from the data that I remember, it's like 1975 or 1978. That's the average age for your home, which for people who are 30 and older or 25 and older, they don't want to stay in a fixer-upper home for the most part. They want to stay somewhere where that home is already built or in an apartment that they don't have to worry about cutting the grass. They don't have to worry about the water and the rent. No, I'm not the rent, the water and the sewer and adding lines and all that type of thing. So the key to retaining our economic base, I believe, is ensuring that the people are staying in Aliceville. And so through our economic developer, one of the things that we're trying to focus on is seeking some developers that are willing to come in and build those apartments. We're trying to work out some agreements with those people. We have land opportunities. We're willing to offer some abatements potentially, depending on what they want to bring to the table. And we've had a couple of people who been interested, but it is a slow process. And if anybody has been tuned in with the current economic state, everybody is kind of pumping the brakes on spending. The Fed rates have gone up almost a point, about 0.75, and potentially going to go up some more. So those are the things that, you know, those long-term people are looking at. And so we have to be cognizant of that. But I think the key to our growth is the actual physical growth to where people are staying here. And then once you stay in Aliceville, you'll shop in Aliceville, you buy your groceries in Aliceville, you'll go to the movies. Once the movie theater opens up, you'll spend your money in Aliceville. But as long as those jobs are here, but there's nowhere for them to live, then outside of the 5 to 10 homes that are for sale, that are, again, at 1975 average size, our average date, that's where we kind of run into problems. So I'm not sure if I gave you a long answer to a short question, but I wanted to make sure I was kind of thorough in what I said.
Hey, you have provided some valuable information, Mayor. I am very much interested in developing maybe some apartment complex. I am a real estate investor.
Okay.
And again, I will look forward on my next visit to Aliceville. I will certainly reach out to you and see what we can do about bringing some affordable housing to Aliceville. And in the meantime, since I have you on the phone, if you know of anyone who's looking for a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath brick home for rent, I have one in Aliceville, a nice brick home right down from the middle school, and it's available for rent at about $700-$750. So you can contact me, and we'll go from there.
That'll work. What I'll do is if you send me that information once we get offline, we actually on our City of Aliceville website. I created a little tab to where when people are coming in, because a lot of times when people come into the city, they say, hey, what are your living options? What kind of housing options do you have? As of right now, I can't say anything. So, hey, we got a couple of these houses for sale that are right here. And so so we developed a page to where people for free, and it's not going to promote a realtor or anything like that. It'll just have the property address. It'll have a contact name and number. and they'll let you know that this house is for rent or this house is for sale, and then they'll be able to make that contact. And I think this is a good resource that people are kind of starting to tap into now. So that way, whenever a new person comes to town, they can look and see, okay, outside of going to Zillow, because everybody doesn't list their home on Zillow. Everybody doesn't tap into the realtor.com or your favorite website. But if they contact the city hall, which most of the time they will or can do, then we can try to point them in that right direction. So, yeah, that sounds good.
I look forward to interacting with you, Jerry.
Yes, sir.
All right. Looks like we have a caller. Malcolm, if you could mute your phone to cut out any background. I do have a caller in the 510 area code. Caller, would you state your name and where you're calling from and ask your question or comment? Caller, press the number 1 in the 510 area code. Did you have a question or comment? Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me. I'm sorry about that. A caller in the 510 area code. Please state your name and where you're calling from and ask your question or comment. All right. I don't know what happened, but someone pushed number 1. Did you have a question or comment for Mayor Windham? I guess not. We'll move on. Yeah, so just out of curiosity, Mayor, you say that there's two other mayors, one your frat brother and another one in other towns in Alabama. What are those towns?
One of them is Talladega. Talladega is mayor. You didn't ask me his name. I would have remembered it to you. He's a young guy. I think Talladega is over there by Jacksonville. He's the youngest mayor in Talladega history. And I think he's the first black mayor in Talladega history, if I'm not mistaken. and we've been in contact, and he's helped me out with a lot of opportunities. And then also the other one is Camp Hill. He's a mayor out of Camp Hill, out of my, it's a smaller community. I think it's about a little smaller than Aliceville. But nonetheless, it's they're the two, as far as I know, the two youngest mayors in Alabama. The three youngest. Well, we're the three youngest.
Right. Well, kind of changing the subject a little bit, but you're 34 years old, and a lot of people in this audience, they're older folks. What would you have to say to, elders? Any advice? Ways of better communicating with younger people. Just what's on your heart about that, Mayor?
Okay, yes, sir. Good question. A lot of times, and I don't like to say old people. I like to say seasoned people because they're seasoned. They have been through a whole bunch of season and they got a lot of season on them. So dealing with seasoned people. Actually, that's pretty much who I grew up around when I was younger. And I say younger relatively. Look, I know y'all listening on the call. He's only 34. But as I was growing up, I was always around people who had been experienced in life and tried to listen to what they had to say. And sometimes I understood it. A lot of times I didn't understand it, but I tried to listen long enough to hopefully remember it. And then when I needed it, I would be able to use it because I was one of the people and still one of the people who try not to buy all the lessons that I receive. I can let somebody else go by it, and I can just learn from what they went through. But I would encourage our seasoned members who are listening today is don't be afraid to talk to these younger people, because we need it. The word tells us that the young are supposed to help teach the old. Young women are supposed to learn from the older women about life, about how to live and raise children, about how to be good wives, about how to be good community, productive people, and what that entails. And same thing with men. The young men are supposed to listen to the older men, to the seasoned men, and learn about how to be a man, how to treat your family, how to provide for your family. But a lot of that is lost sometimes because sometimes the seasoned people might be afraid about what somebody is going to say back to them or getting cursed out or getting something done to them. But I want to assure you that 98% of the people who you encounter who are younger, and if you tell them, and this is the key, to tell them in the spirit of love and not a spirit of I'm better than you or you got to listen to what I'm saying because I'm older and I've been around long enough, so you just got to listen to me just because. But we just explain it to them. And then also with this generation of children and youth, especially my age and younger, we want to know the answer why. And I know I got backhanded a lot of times with my folks when I ask them, well, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? There's a time when for younger children that they just need to do it just because. But sometimes if we explain the reason why we're doing something, that'll first let them know that you respect them enough to tell them, don't just do it because I'm telling you not to do it. Do it because this is the reason why. And then also it'll give them a reason on what brought you to that realization. So I think sometimes we just say, don't do it, and then we don't have a reason why not to do it. And that may turn some people off and not want them to listen to you. So I encourage you to say why or explain your why and say it in a loving and respectable way. And, you know, I always say whatever you have to say between the goalposts. And what I mean by that when I say between the goalposts, it's important that we tell the truth, but it's also important that we tell it with love. And sometimes we tell too much, give too much love and not enough truth, and there's a bad field goal because you ain't told them the truth. Or you give them too much truth and you ain't gave them enough love, and then they get turned off by it because we're not displaying it or sharing it in the right way. But if we put it in the goalpost between truth and love, then most of the time, everything will be good.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that was some good advice. So you're saying don't be afraid to give advice, but give it in love and be prepared to say why, you know, you think that this would be a good thing for them.
Right. Correct. Yes, sir.
Now, Terrence, a little bit about your ministry. You are the pastor of the Northside Missionary Baptist Church in Columbus, Mississippi. So when you started to become a minister, what was that like when the Lord first called you?
Well, it was quite interesting. I didn't necessarily run from the quote call, but I wasn't chomping at the bit. I had just just pledged a year earlier, and I wanted to be out there, and I wasn't ever doing anything crazy, but I didn't want people to put another standard on me that I had to achieve, or have to be held to a high standard, because I know as a minister you have to. But after I crossed in 2009, that spring, I think I did, in the spring of 10, I did my first sermon, and so I've been in the ministry ever since then. So it was kind of it was never weird per se, because I never was a big partier. I didn't do a lot of drinking and didn't, you know, go around cussing people out and all this other type of stuff. But it was something to have a different standard held to. So, like, I guess I took it just about as good as I could, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, we hear so many stories about people, they get the call to go into ministry, and at first they don't want to do it, you know, and then the Lord tapping them, you know, then they finally surrender. But in your case, it wasn't like you just said, "No, Lord, I don't want to do this."
Well, like I said, it wasn't an immediate, "I'm gonna just do it." I was just like, let me kind of hold off on it. And then I heard all the stories, like what you just said, about Joker going out there and getting laid down in the hospital, and you know, on their back, and all they could do is, you know, look up and talk. I said, "Lord, you ain't gotta do all that to me. I'll go on and do it if you want me to go." So that wasn't my choice, but I do know that it's definitely the best decision that I could have made. So I'm glad to be in that opportunity. So.
Right. I'm always interested to hear how pastors prepare their sermons. Every week you prepare a sermon with your busy life, your family. So how do you do that?
Well, I try to start early most of the time on the idea of perfect week. I would try to start earlier in the week on Monday or Tuesday to know, or sometimes even Sunday if I know what scripture that I'm going to go with. And just try to look over it, and I try to write it early. Most of the time I know what I'm going to say, but I try to write down a manuscript, and although I don't go by it all the time, I'd at least have something on paper, and just being familiar with the topic and trying to kind of understand and let the Spirit lead you. But it's good to pre-plan ahead, and I try to listen to other preachers who are all across the country about how they prepare and how they plan, and you know, creating sermons for the year, or sermons for the month, or for the quarter, or whatever. And then that way, you don't have to guess about what you're going to be speaking on every Sunday or every Saturday night.
Right. What are some of the themes that you're preaching about right now?
Oh, we just came out of a series with Dave, talking about David and Goliath, and how a lot of times we look at David and Goliath just as, hey, David defeated Goliath. But we kind of examine who Goliath was, how Goliath was looked at amongst the people. He was a big time. We called him the Challenger. And so he had a lot of accolades. He was 9 foot tall. He had a lot of military background. And he wore armor that was strong, and had a lot of prestige behind his name because of his size. And then we looked at David. In comparison, David was a lowly shepherd boy. He wasn't in the army. He had already been ordained at that time by the priest and anointed to be the next king, but he still was in his role as a shepherd. which kind of taught us that, hey, while you're in your role, sometimes you might be anointed to do something, but you need to wait until it's your time to move into that position. And that's kind of where I familiarize myself with David, because you might be anointed to do some things, but sometimes you just got to wait until it's your time to do it. And so then we looked at how he kind of came out of his situation victorious and how we all had the opportunity to be victorious as well. And so it's just a good story to look at, not just, hey, he hit him with the slingshot, but let's look at how he hit him, how he survived, and what happened with the story. So I think that's the latest series that we did.
Okay. If someone has some background noise, if you mute the phone, that'd be great. We got another 3 or 4 minutes left. If anybody has a final question or comment for Mayor Terrence Windham of Aliceville, Alabama, please press the number 1 on your phone, and we'll let you make your question or comment. I see somebody in the 510 area code pressed the number 1 earlier, but they didn't seem to have a question or comment. So if you do, you can go ahead. So, yeah, we got a few minutes to go here. Brother Terrence, I'm so glad that you could come on the show today. I know you're very busy. You want to encourage more young people to get involved. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, I just want to. I know your listening audience might be a little different, but they can kind of spread this out to their loved ones, cousins, friends, and relatives. It's okay to get involved with not only politics and what's going on in your community, because it's not necessarily politics that you have to get involved with. Just get involved with your community. And in effect, you're probably going to get involved with politics. I'm the youngest person on our board, about 30 years or so. So about 20 or 30 years. And so it's important that young people insert themselves, go to the council meetings, go to those community meetings and put your input in, so that way the community that you live in is something that you kind of help build. And that's also with the church. I know with COVID-19, a lot of kids and grown folks have fell away from the church. But it's always good timing to come back into the fold. And if we want to have a complete life and not, you know, say, well, you just got a lot of money or you just satisfied mentally, in order for our spiritual man to be fed, it's important for us to get affiliated with the church body. And learn the word for yourself. So those are the two things I want to encourage, you know, our younger generation to do, and also encourage our older generation, our seasoned generation, to make sure that they give encouragement to these younger people when they see them.
Okay. Well, Mayor Terrence, I have learned from you today. Instead of calling folks olders and stuff like that, I'm going to say seasoned.
I don't know. That'll work.
they seasoned. But we got somebody have a question?
In the door.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's a little late right now. We got one more minute, and we've had with us today Mayor Terrence Windham, mayor of Aliceville, Alabama, and we had a great conversation, learned a lot. Thank you, everybody, for calling in today, and Mayor Windham, thank you for coming on the show today. I know you was busy, and you took this time out. We really appreciate it. I want to congratulate you on what you're doing as the mayor of Aliceville. Keep up the good work. And just try to stay positive and try to stay optimistic. Everybody, if you're listening, you can call in on Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. Call in is 516-387-1611. All right, everybody, have a great week. God willing, we'll see you same time next week.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.